ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news. Every week you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
The interesting thing about it is that the National Party's job in the coalition has been to keep those votes for the coalition and not let them slip to One Nation. That's always been their traditional role.
So join me for Politics Now on the ABC Listen app.
Hey, Jez.
Jules, hit me.
I'm wondering about this. Did you see the interview that James Packer did with Rampart on his yacht, which I believe was moored in Fiji at the time?
I did see the interview, and yes, it really struck me as an example of how money can't buy happiness. He was really, really unhappy. And in particular, of all the people in the world, in particular with Daniel Andrews, the former Victorian Premier, whom he described as human filth.
Yeah. He said he not only did he ruin Victoria, but he almost ruined his life.
And this was about gambling regulation and the impost that that had on Crown when he was a part owner.
What I found really striking about this is, firstly, he made billions from the sale of Crown. So even though he believes he lost tens of millions because of this tax, he still did extremely well. But I think the second thing is, to talk about that, oh, all these darn regulations, without acknowledging why those regulations were imposed. If I could read this. So in 2021, the Victorian Royal Commission found that Crown's resorts conduct was disgraceful, and it had the license to operate the state's only casino when it breached its legal, social, moral obligations with illegal activities, tax avoidance, money laundering, criminal associations, and significant harm to vulnerable community members. It's wild, isn't it?
What's interesting is that despite all that, there is a very prominent narrative in the community about the benefits of having a gambling industry and the cultural value and recreational value that it brings.
And maybe that's where the problem is now that we're seeing in Parliament. A lot of people saying, we've had reviews, we've had reports, there's a series of recommendations. Why the resistance, why the tinkering around the edges, and why is more not being done about this? I'm Julia Baird in Sydney on Gadigal land.
And I'm Jeremy Fernandez, and this is Not Stupid, where we chat about the news of the week, Jules. In particular this week, gambling reform and why it's so difficult to pass through Parliament. This is something that both of us have been talking about for years. And also, Jules, a follow-up on one of our most popular segments from last year.
Yes.
It's time for the Macquarie Dictionary's Word of the Year.
I think I'm still recovering from last year's inshitification, which might be the word of the decade.
I agree. Jules, I've been a journalist for a long time. And there is one story that has never gone away.
That's
it's around
right.
gambling reform.
Yeah.
And it is really puzzling to a lot of people why there's been such almost glacial movement around regulating gambling and who gets access to the ads that promote it.
Right. And this is something that we're wrestling with right now in federal parliament. But I just want to set the scene, Jez. I have collected some stats for you just to outline the scale of the problem here, because I think it's worth reminding. Now, we lose more per head of population to gambling than anywhere else in the world.
Isn't that extraordinary?
The latest figures have it at about $32 billion a year. Now, that's not how much we gamble. That's how much we lose. The Productivity Commission has looked at this a number of times. Obviously, it's not the most productive use of money. We're talking about the social harm, but I think the scale of it is really hard to wrap your head around. You know, so in Victoria, many billions. New South Wales, there are these new figures out just a few days ago. Poker machine players in this state are losing more than $1 million every hour. So while in this country we have 1% of the world's population, we have 18% of its poker machines. Now, anyone listening to this will have watched the creep of poker machines into their local pubs and their local clubs. It used to just be just for licensed RSLs, but we know that it's gone beyond that now.
But also the advertising, Jules. It used to be the case that there were certain limits around, you know, where you would see these ads pop up. And as we've become, you know, live our lives more online, you go on things like YouTube, social media, and you see these ads pop up unannounced.
Yeah.
And
it's exploded.
Yeah. Kids have access to this stuff too.
Yep. A lot of teenagers, especially when it comes to sports. But also, I think it's worth noting that, I mean, there's a range of gambling because there is the lotteries and scratchies, which is how most people do in this country, 64%. Horse racing, 38%. Sports betting, 34%. Pokies, 33%. But most people gamble on multiple products, so two or more. Now, who is doing this?
I'm going to guess, and I think I'm right.
Yep.
It's young men.
That's it.
Vastly overrepresented.
Yep.
People from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. And get this, Jules, the Grattan Institute has found this as well. If you live within a couple of kilometres of a gambling venue, you are much more likely to be a gambler and to suffer the harms from it. So there is a geographical kind of factor here as well.
Yeah, that's right. It's exactly right. So it's 18 to 34 years is where it skews in terms of the gambling, except for horse racing, which is 55 plus. Men double the number of women. And there's about 1%, when you're talking about online, about 1% of online gamblers generate more than 40% of all losses. So there's a real high loss, high stakes situation. For
and at this point,
people,
you've got to think of it as a health issue, right? These are having real outcomes for people's health, their families, their ability to pay a mortgage, homelessness,
Contributes to domestic violence. Yeah. We know it's a massive contributor to domestic violence with the strain of all of that. And it the fact that it becomes addictive. And as you say, like if you look up where are the most pokies aggregated, I just looked up New South Wales yesterday, for example, Bankstown, 745 machines at Bankstown Sports Club, then Rudy Hill, then Canterbury Leagues Club. It's not in the high income areas of the state.
So there was a parliamentary inquiry held a couple of years ago. It was led by the late Labor MP Peter Murphy, and it recommended an outright ban on all gambling ads to be phased in over 3 years. That was a proposal. Mm. The government's been under pressure this past couple of weeks because there's been very little movement, no movement on those particular recommendations.
Yes, and I think, so Steve Kinnane, who's an excellent reporter, one of our colleagues, who did a big Four Corners investigation into gambling, and he's done a lot of work on this over the years and how those protections are just not working and kind of the grief that this causes a lot of families and the financial stress. And we know that there's documented suicides and so on. So Steve has gone to the government repeatedly and said, tell me one of the recommendations from this inquiry that you've brought in, one, even a minor one, and they've never given him an answer. So we're waiting for these big questions online, the advertising, yes, but also ombudsman, a regulator, cracking down on the VIP schemes, which kind of pull in people who gamble more and more with all these incentives and so on. So I think there's been a strange silence around that. 2.5 years. So it seems to be bubbling up to the surface again now.
It was really interesting when you talk to people like MPs. I had the occasion of being in Parliament House yesterday.
Yes.
And had a chance to talk to MPs about, you know, how they fall on the issue. And it's interesting when you talk to some of them, they describe the cultural and recreational value of gambling.
This is so interesting to tease out.
Right.
Like how much of that is part of our resistance?
I think there's a mischaracterization of these controls and limits around gambling as being a wowser. Someone described it to me as being, you know, you don't want to be on the wowser train.
Right.
Right? Because you're being a killjoy if you crack down on gambling. Now, let's be really clear here. No one is saying all gambling should end. This is not about taking those options away from people. It's just about limiting access to it, advertising, particularly
for children
and the vulnerable.
Exactly.
You know, in a context where we're talking about a social media ban for children, this remains very much a live prospect for children to be exposed to gambling.
And can I add as well, there was a report by the Australia Institute that found that 50%, there were 50% more pokies in local government areas that had an Indigenous population of at least 10%.
And what's really interesting too is that all our responses to the gambling problem, addiction so far, this is not an awareness issue. There is not a lack of awareness about the harms of gambling, right?
Yeah.
But what it does is individualize the harms of gambling. So, like, if you have a gambling problem, that's kind of your fault.
You've got a problem.
And you need to resist.
Yeah, control yourself.
Control yourself.
Yes.
And so what that does is take away responsibility from regulators, from government, from business to do something about it, to keep the harms away from the people who are most vulnerable.
So there's been this gathering momentum. Now, the Prime Minister could have picked it up at the last election, but it's not just the sense of the cultural, oh, I blame you for your own problem, and who doesn't like, you know, having a go at the pokies every now and then.
Don't be a killjoy.
Yeah, don't be a killjoy. Maybe get on the greyhounds after you've had a bit of yum cha, whatever. But there's three lobby groups that are agitating against this. We have the gambling groups, the sports betting industry, and the sports codes. And they have had quite a strong impact, and we know are significant donors to both political parties.
And some of their criticism is fair in that some of these regulations would fall disproportionately on them as domestic operators, and what they worry about is that that market for gambling would just turn to overseas operators. Mm. So you wouldn't actually fix the problem and disproportionately affect local operators. Now, this is something that that's their argument.
Yes.
And what's been interesting is to see the Prime Minister and the Labor Party relay those concerns. And this is where the challenge for the government is around leadership, that at some point they have to make a decision about how hard they're going to go with these reforms. Now, there's a body of evidence there about the harms of gambling.
Yep.
There are independents and coalition members who are agitating for reform.
Yes.
There are members of the Labor backbench who are agitating for reform. Mm. There are people who have been through and survived the harms of gambling. Luke Bateman is one of them. He's a former NRL player. He was earning like $400,000 a year playing for the Canberra Raiders. You might know him as the book guy on social media.
Oh, yeah, I do know him. Yeah. Yeah.
Really charming, lovely guy. Yeah. Never met him, but he's just really engaging and has a beautiful way of articulating himself. But he's recently spoken about how he spent all his money on gambling. He was a young guy living in the city, nothing to do, just gambled.
Yeah.
Gambled his money away. And there are people who've not survived that experience.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of momentum behind it, but it's really interesting to watch the power, as you say, of the industry in holding that front. And this is where, when we talked about James Packer, he expresses what that's about. It's about ultimately about money. I love the end of that interview with James Packer where he says, I wouldn't be sitting on this yacht doing this interview if I hadn't got out of gambling. So there's a shade of acknowledgement there that he's actually done very well out of it.
Yeah.
Come at someone else's expense.
That's right. That's right. Can I go back to the idea, though, that it'll all be pushed offshore? There's not actually evidence to back that up. Now, I know they will cite Norway and Sweden, but again, the reporters on Four Corners have not been able to find those studies or any evidence to back that up. And in fact, they called those jurisdictions to say, is this the case? And there was no evidence.
Western Australia is one of those states where pokie machines are limited to basically to casinos. So I grew up in WA, right, as you know.
Yeah.
And I remember moving to Victoria for the first time and just suddenly kind of coming across poker machines in pubs and clubs. It was just a thing. And it was like that feeling, you know, when you go overseas and you walk into a really smoky bar and you go, what is this? Like, I'd forgotten what this was like. How weird.
And you're still okay with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But WA gives a really great example of what life is like without poker machines, or certainly limited access to poker machines, right? They still have just about per capita, similar number of clubs to New South Wales, more than Victoria per capita, less than Queensland.
Yeah.
The Grattan Institute's done a study about this and it says West Australians are not missing out on sports coaches, volunteering or social connection. These things don't increase with pokies. We've got an example right there in WA of how it's managed and how the gambling harms are dramatically reduced as a result of that.
Do you ever have a crack on the pokies?
I've never. Look, I can understand when other people do. I've like bet on a horse race once.
Yeah.
I've had a go on the pokies a couple of times just to see how it works.
Yeah.
It just doesn't excite me.
Same.
But I get that it, and I know people for whom it excites.
Yes.
And I get that they get
the risk takers. Enjoy, yeah. I think I must be risk adverse because for me those things are like, here's $20.
Oh. And I see the $20 go.
It's gone.
And I go, I could have bought lunch with that.
Could have had a burger. Exactly. And a beer. So, but what about this argument of the Prime Minister? Like he says, look, there could be unintended consequences.
Isn't that the argument against everything, though?
Yes, it's. But I think what he was referring to, at least in large part here, was what happens when you remove the revenue from televisions who are very much struggling with their business model in a digital era.
So gambling revenue is today one of the biggest sources of tax revenue for state and territory governments. From the Grattan Institute, these figures are, in total, state and territory governments collected about $9 billion in gambling taxes in 2022-23.
That's a massive amount.
It's a substantial amount of money.
For states and so to unhook themselves
It's a
from.
Sugar hit that if you give that up,
right?
What else? Do we collectively decide we're going to give away?
But we haven't had that conversation.
No.
It's like, do we accept that social evil?
Yeah.
It's like that Ursula Le Guin story where there's a child in a basement who's completely miserable, like in a dungeon. You know this story?
Oh, I was just going to say it's like Ursula from The Little Mermaid. But same analogy, right? Like, give me your voice and I'll give you life above the ocean.
Yeah. What will it take to walk on the earth?
Sorry, you had something much more noble.
No, it wasn't. But it's like it's the idea that this whole town knows that their prosperity like rests on the misery of this girl in the basement, and that if you disrupt it, they'll have to give up the way they live. So they just ignore it.
Mm.
And that's just like this fable of what do we accept? And I feel like actually that is the conversation we're not really having.
It's interesting, the mood in Parliament when I was talking to various MPs, there is a sense of optimism that something will move, something will happen, and an acceptance that those who are advocating for these limits on gambling are not going to get everything they ask for.
Right.
And what the fight in Parliament is among those people who want action is what they're willing to sacrifice.
Where's the compromise?
Where is the compromise?
Will it be a shorter period of day? Yeah. Will it be, yeah.
And most of them acknowledge that there will need to be some kind of compromise, even on the Labor side. You talk to the Teals, you talk to Simon Kennedy from the Coalition.
Yep.
They all kind of talk about this need to negotiate a way out of this. But the answer is not to keep things as they are because we're so afraid of what the consequences might be.
Oh, and to that, by the way, I mean, there is a debate around how much the broadcasters actually rely on that revenue. So they get about $3.3 billion, which is total television advertising. And they estimate the ACMA, the Australian Communications Media Authority, that it's about $162 million that
it's
comes from gambling. So it's not insubstantial, and it is significant. It would be a decent whack. And I'm sure, you know, the bean counters at these places are already tearing their hair out.
So that means
not an overwhelming killer blow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm interested to see where the negotiations are going to end up. I mean, a lot of people talk about Anthony Albanese is keeping his party, his caucus very disciplined, doesn't want people speaking out. People talk about his affinity with Souths, with football codes. He says, I don't want to get in the way of people having a punt and so on. So it's an interesting challenge. And the question is, I guess, should there be a conscience vote?
Well, so this is sort of the thing, right? Anthony Albanese has managed to exercise some discipline in Labor. And we see the contrast with the Coalition where they're kind of fighting among themselves and they can't effectively exercise the job of opposition to their full capacity.
Mm.
Labor, on the other hand, very disciplined. So disciplined, in fact, that members who disagree with Labor's approach to gambling reform, I mean, they've done some bits and pieces around the edges, like, you know, limiting credit card use for certain types of gambling, bet stop where you can register yourself. This is not enough for those people who are calling for change.
Yeah.
But I think the exercise of giving a conscience vote on gambling is to kind of dispense with this idea of discipline for just a moment on this one particular issue and let people go their own way. And we know that in communities that have particularly seen these harms bubbling up, they want action on this.
Mm.
Countless numbers of MPs describe how people come to them and say they want some kind of solution, want some kind of action,
right,
and want their kids to be
stories
protected.
Stories of suicide, which is what Kennedy has spoken about. Yep. No, the social harm.
This is a health issue. Yeah,
I've known people that have lost their houses, that have had horrific domestic violence situations, that have had suicide attempts. Like, I think it's almost no area that's unmarked by this in many ways. But now is a big chance.
All right, Jules.
Yeah.
Macquarie Dictionary has named its word of the year. Yeah. Over to you to do the big announcement.
Oh. Okay. Well, should we talk about some of the contenders?
Yeah, go on.
Ate and left no crumbs.
I get it.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's so old.
I don't think it's a word of the year, and let alone of the fact that it's how many words?
Yeah.
Five. Attention economy. It's not sexy, is it? It's true.
It's true. I mean, everything has been held to last year's standard of intuitification being the word of the year. So now, look, I feel like these are all falling a bit short. The next one, Australian sushi.
Yeah.
Did you know that was a thing?
I did, because they opened one in New York that have the nori rolls and everyone's like, this is Australian sushi.
But it's like a cylinder of sushi.
Yeah.
Is apparently a uniquely Australian thing.
Yeah, actually, that I didn't know until they opened one and everyone started freaking out about it. The fact that it's in a word of the year, it's like, what the? Bird dogging?
I don't even know what that means.
You know, when you're pursuing something, you're pursuing a politician or a public figure and you're asking them really direct questions.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's clanker, Jez.
Which apparently means a robot that would carry out a function that would otherwise be performed by a human. So I'm thinking like maybe one of those robot vacuum cleaners?
Is that a clanker? Unless it's something that's trying to, which we love watching all those videos. They're like, here's the Russian robot, and then it falls on its face. And we're all like, yay, humans.
Yeah, I saw that video. I loved it.
I feel like it's derogatory. This is a clanker.
Right, okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Medical misogyny. The fact that doctors don't learn about, like, menopause, for example,
at
medical school. Like, what? And all the studies showing that most of the studies done for pain are done on male rats, male mice, like the vast majority. They've only just recently started because a woman getting her period like ruins the whole thing. You know what I mean? And you're like, well, that's the point, mate.
Yeah.
That's kind of part of what females experience. So I'm fascinated that that's actually made it onto the list, that there's been more of a hubbub around that now.
Ozempic face.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not something generally in my world. I do know people who are, you know, trying to lose weight in various ways.
Oh, I see Ozempic face all over the place.
What is it? What is the face? Can you identify it?
You lose a lot of weight.
Oh, but like...
So it's drawn.
Right. Not in a nice way.
Not like one of your French girls. It's like drawn. It's like tired. You don't have like the fat on your face to hold it up anymore. So people start to look very different. But Mar-a-Lago face is another one.
Oh, what's that?
Oh,
it's very orange.
Heard of that. No, you know the look. A lot of the women prominent in the Trump administration, whether it was wives or partners.
Yes.
So puffy lips, very tight faces, big eyes, long, long hair.
I think of that as the Fox News look.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of crossover
kind of, there's a
there.
Real, yeah.
Yeah, but that didn't make it up.
The final one, Jules, I was in Melbourne a couple of weekends ago.
Yeah.
And I was at Southern Cross Station and this random child just came up to me and went, 6'7", 6'7".
Did you say that?
I was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it means. I don't know how I'm supposed to respond. But it's made it as a contender to Macquarie Dictionary's Word of the Year.
If you're watching South Park, which I am at the moment, there was a whole episode on
that. Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're all like, yeah. And Cartman gets very sick, but he's still kind of doing that the whole time. But if my kids ever say that and I go very knowingly, I don't say anything.
Right.
I just kind of do this. They're like, oh, stop. So do you know what else was on this list too was Roman Empire? And I actually really like that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, well, as a historian, this is right up your alley.
Yeah, I like the idea. It was genuinely fascinating to me that so many men were like, I think about the Roman Empire like at least
once a day. I have my doubts about this.
You think, okay, tell me.
Does it not just sound so absurd?
Yes. But they would be like, yeah. Then you would go back and ask your guys that you knew. They're like, yeah, I probably think about that a few times a week. That was amazing to me. So then you go, what is the thing that slips into my mind that I think about?
Oh, what's your equivalent of your Roman Empire?
You're going to ask me that. Now I can't think of one. I've got a lot of Roman empires.
Really? Yeah. I feel like I do too. One of my most recent ones is op shops.
Oh, yeah.
I keep thinking about op shops
mm-hmm.
and, like, I need to duck in and, like, see what they're doing. And
the joy of op shops.
Yeah.
The ocean probably.
Ah.
I think about it a lot. When I'm in it, when I'm away from it, what's happening to it, why it has this incredible impact on everyone all the time.
How lovely.
Yeah.
It's a good Roman Empire.
Yeah. I'm kind of obsessed with awe. I'm pretty obsessed with that. The erasing of women's voices, the shutting down of female authority. That's been my Roman Empire since I was about 18.
Yeah.
Like all the mechanisms in place culturally to stop women from speaking and question their authority when they do. And I've spent a very long time finding that in so many different iterations.
Now, we've saved the best one for last, though.
Because
in a very rare occurrence, the Macquarie Dictionary Committee's Word of the Year has coincided with the People's Choice for Word of the Year, which speaks to a degree of frustration about the world we're in right now. The Word of the Year, Jules, is?
AI slop.
Meaning?
Meaning just the junk that AI puts together. You know my view on this. I cannot stand it.
Do you know what I loved about the description from Macquarie Dictionary?
What?
It's the stuff that's spewed out by AI that the user didn't ask for.
Absolutely no one.
No one asked for this.
Yeah. No one ever. AI.
It's true.
Yeah. And then I cannot stand it. I can't stand the sleekness of it. I can't stand the way it comes into my friggin' feed and doesn't announce itself as that. I want it out of my feed always. I just want an all human one.
Yes, same.
And then things keep coming on. Like this week I was like, oh, did that seal hop onto the boat to get away from the orca?
Oh, I've seen that too.
Was it's it AI.
It's AI.
Yes. And I was like,
See, this is the thing. We can't even tell.
I know. And so the thing is, Jez, like, there are seals escaping orca videos out there that are real. Mm. And then suddenly one comes along that's just a bit slicker, a bit smoother, and you get that uncanny valley thing. You get that.
Why is there a palm tree in the background of this where this seal is swimming?
Yeah, and then why can't I just see the real one if there was a real one?
Yeah.
You know?
Do you go through, when you get AI recommended stuff, do you actively say, I don't want to see this again, I'm blocking
this
account?
Yeah, and I sometimes comment on it and go, friggin' AI, get it out of my,
And
people are so onto it.
Yeah.
It'll be the first or second comment. Like this one of the seal, like people were just raging about it being a confected video.
I don't know if I could always guarantee that I'd be able to pick it though. It's getting very, very good.
Oh, totally. And that's the alarm of it. That's when we get to friggin' presidential elections and that's when we get to
misinformation,
disinformation. Like, exactly. And we don't seem to have guardrails in place for that. So I think AI is slop. But the fact is we're using the word slop because it's, you know, somehow secondary and somehow like just not as good as the human stuff. But it's going to be better but still slop because it's not human.
And it's not real.
And it's not real.
Yeah.
I'm finding it, I am actually genuinely finding it disturbing when I come across, because then I'm also seeing incredibly beautiful things going, yeah, is that AI though? Mm. It's altering your sense of reality in a way. So do you agree with that for the word of the year?
I think that would be my pick too. I think everyone's kind of right on top of it. But what I think it speaks to is our collective frustration about the ecosystem, information ecosystem that we're living in, that it's all kind of making us second guess everything, which is not a particularly pleasurable way to enjoy a piece of entertainment, a piece of video, a piece of information.
I just think we're going to see increasingly the argument for imperfection. Make sure people know that it's that we're human.
Yeah.
There's something that's just like slightly wrong with it.
Hey, quick shout out to Tiger Webb, who's our language research specialist here at the ABC.
Yes.
Who was on the committee that picked the word of the year for Macquarie Dictionary. So
I think it's a good choice.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good conversation to have, and like intuitification too.
Tiger's a good person. We hit Tiger up all the time for, you know, to check lots of random
things
around language and use of words and what's appropriate.
Yeah.
And what's correct in the historical context.
It's such great expertise to have, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But don't you think that AI slop isn't shitification?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I see a trend.
We will never let go of that word.
Thank you.
All right, Jez, it's that time. Pick of the week.
Quick one, Jules, this week. This is a nod to Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint, who played the original characters, the two boys in Harry Potter, have written letters to the kids who will be playing their roles in a TV series, a Harry Potter series coming up in 2027. And Daniel Radcliffe, who played the original Harry Potter, said this on Good Morning America recently, said, "I wrote to Dominic McLaughlin, who's going to be playing the role of Harry Potter. I sent him a letter and he sent me a very sweet note back. I did not want to be a spectre in the lives of these children. I just wanted to write to McLaughlin to say, I had a great time, but I hope you have an even better time." And Rupert Grint wrote, "Boy,
Ron
he'll be
Weasley.
Playing Ron Weasley."
Yeah.
And he's always been an advocate for other actors to take on the role. And what I really love about this is this idea of, you know, kind of going out on a high and surrendering a thing that's yours and that you've embodied and owned so closely, and kind of wishing someone well to take it on and carry it into the future. I thought it was a really, such a graceful thing to do.
It really is.
To wish someone well in taking on, in this case, a role that meant so much to these two actors.
That was them.
That was
because
them.
Because they grew. Yeah, with, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to let those kids, these new kids now, grow up in that role, and people will see them and know them and watch them grow up on screen.
See the magic.
I just love the grace that
came
with
that. Yeah, I love
that
too. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Mine is not so sweet.
Okay.
So we're on the outskirts of Bangkok and there's a Buddhist temple there.
I know this story. This is right up your alley. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I'm sorry, it makes me sound very macabre.
It's so good.
And so there's a pickup truck there and it's a place where they do cremations and there's this white coffin there, but it's an open coffin of a woman who's been dead for days.
Mm-hmm.
It starts to twitch and starts to move and they're like...
Which happens sometimes with corpses, yes.
My gosh. Yeah. But no... She was alive.
She starts knocking.
Starts
on
knocking.
The side of the
That's
coffin.
Right. Just a bit of a wait, can we do it?
Tick, 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 tick.
Hello. That feeling coming to and then going, wait, what?
She was about to be cremated.
She was about to be cremated.
That is horrifying.
The brother says, "I was a bit surprised." Now, the brother had driven her hundreds and hundreds of miles, first to a hospital, but they wouldn't give him a death certificate there.
Wonder why.
So here's the thing. She'd been bedridden for about 2 years and then her health deteriorated. She became unresponsive. So about a couple of days before this, she appeared to stop breathing. So he drives 500 kilometres to this hospital and they've said, because she had wanted to donate her organs there, and he said, "No, you haven't got it. And if no one's declared her officially dead, you can't have her." He goes, "Oh, well, I guess I'll have her cremated then." And then the people at the temple are like, "Mate, we need a death certificate." And as they're sitting there and working it all out, you realize it was indeed a salient point. He says, "I was a bit surprised, so I asked them to open the coffin and everyone was startled. I saw her opening her eyes slightly and knocking on the side of the coffin. She must have been knocking for quite some time." So... now they've taken her off to a nearby hospital.
But Jules, did this not used to happen? Have we spoken about this before, that this used to happen in Victorian times?
Jeremy, thank you for asking.
Because I have a vague memory.
Yes.
This is kind of a historical...
Okay. What it was a national obsession with it, a really deep anxiety.
Look, I read about this a lot as a kid and I was led to believe it happens much more often.
No, it actually does. Really does not happen very often. I tell you, there was some examples like... There was actually one example in 17th century England. It was a woman called Alice Blunden. So she had a large quantity of poppy tea.
Right.
So big fat opium drink.
Yeah.
Passed out. And what they did then, it would often just hold a mirror to your nose and mouth. And if you don't fog it up, they're like, "Oh, well, she's gone. She's out."
Right.
And then she was buried. And then 2 days later, children near the grave heard noises. And they dug her up. But unfortunately, they were like, "Well, she's pretty close to death anyway," so they put her back in the coffin.
What?
Yeah. And then with a guard standing by, but then she tried to free herself. Anyway, so that's actually a dreadful story. But everyone was freaking out about this. But you know what? It really was because of these Victorian physicians and how bad they were. So they would look for breath, not a pulse. They would sometimes tickle patients with feathers, apply sneezing powder, or stick a needle under a toenail. Sometimes red hot pieces of iron, or get this is my favorite, even employing purpose-built machines to rhythmically tug a patient's tongue for hours.
Wow.
Imagine coming to with that going on, with that palaver. So, you know, if you had something like, I don't know, if you were like in a coma or there's certain, obviously, apoplexy, they wouldn't have picked it up. So then people like Nobel, for example, Alfred Nobel, he died in 1896 and he said, here's all my money for the Nobel Prizes, knock yourselves out. But his final request, he wanted his arteries to be severed after his death. And once that had done, he'd go to a crematorium. George Washington, same thing, as in don't bury me for at least 3 days. Hans Christian Andersen left a note by his bed reading, I only appear to be dead.
Just in case.
Yeah. And asked his wife again to cut his veins. And the same thing with Frédéric Chopin, the pianist.
Is it true that people were buried with a little bell and a string that went all the way down to the coffin, that in the event that you needed to ring a ding ding and say, come and rescue me?
Yeah.
Is that real?
They did. They were called safety coffins. And there were a whole bunch of patents for them. And there was a ring. There were like little panels with glass so people could look in and see. They were padded as well. But it was mainly the bell. But unfortunately, if a body is on its way out, there'd be stirring in the coffin anyway, which led to a lot of false alarms. And there's no evidence that any of these coffins saved anyone's life. But I tell you, after the recent events in Thailand, gosh.
I'm going to be leaving a note beside my bed.
I'm not dead. Yeah, so look, just be careful is all I'm saying at this point.
Seek good medical advice.
Good medical. But that's the thing. Once they got better, the doctors, people were like, oh, they actually are on top of this game anymore. Frankly terrifying living in the Victorian times with these malcompetents running around with leeches and mirrors and tongue tuggers. And
I think that's word of the
bellows that go up the bum.
Malcompetents. I like that.
That might be one of my Roman empires. Good to chat,
Jules,
Jess.
Very nice to catch up. Our producers are Madeline Jenner and Cinnamon Nippard.
But we do have a favour to ask this week, Jess.
Jules, we want to hear from our listeners about what you love about the show, what you don't like so much, because we're looking to craft our program for next year.
Yep.
And we'd love to know what you think.
Yeah.
So please
get
in touch.
What you want more of, less of.
Feedback, compliments.
Yeah. Roman empires.
You can get in touch with us via the show notes. We'll put a link in the show notes so you can complete the survey. We'd love to hear from you. So thank you in advance.
See you, Jess.
Jules, nice to catch up.
Always.